The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm joined in my home. It was one of the few times. Andre Preux, you might know him from News Talk 1010, but if you're listening to this, AndreWineReview.ca, and of course, the Two Guys Wine podcast. Andre, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So first, tell people, we'll do promos off the top and the bottom. Where can people find your work? Your website's fantastic. I am jealous of your website. Where can people find you?
AndreWineReview.ca. Mm-hmm. I try to update it three times a week. Been slow at that over the holidays, but primary focus, Ontario wines and what's new and exciting there. Mm-hmm. And you look for Two Guys Talking Wine. I'm sure we'll get you on the podcast at some point too.
Love to. Because
it's always nice to get other voices and expand the network of other great wine podcasts, especially stuff coming from Ontario.
Yeah, and it's funny. And people are like, oh, wow, you're this real champion for it. And I don't mean to be. A, geographically, it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. And B, there is so much good Ontario wine. And the one thing I've tried to do with the pods is get people to realize that there is appellations and sub-appellations.
Yep.
And that they have defined characteristics. Because I think when people realize that, it sort of gives the wines a little more prestige and credibility when you realize, okay, if you are at this spot in Niagara versus here on the bench, the wines are going to be different, even if it's the same grape.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the VQA really needs to be commended on how well set up the appellation system is right now.
Yeah.
I know that if you're familiar with the VQA system and listening to this, a lot of people will feel that it's not perfect. But I think it's great that winemakers and journalists and sommeliers and whoever is connected to the industry are speaking up about concerns they have. But, I mean, it's a growing industry. Like, even in the 10 years I've lived in Ontario, it's really an industry that's entering an adolescence right now. And it's not, I wouldn't even say that the Ontario industry, like it's well established. Mm-hmm. It's got its roots, but you know, it's still working its way through high school. It's not a grown up yet.
Yeah. Oh no. And nor could it be.
Yeah.
You know, just how young it is in comparison to other areas.
Yes.
It's a high school student who's getting good grades.
I think that's a great way to put it. Yeah. High school student has figured out what it wants to be when it grows up.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't need to go to the guidance counselor anymore.
No, no.
You know, it has a good idea. It's not getting A+, but it's okay because they know what they're doing.
It's getting A+ in some classes, in some years, and things like that.
So I want to talk about your pod and the website, but let's, why bury the lead? You're also a winemaker. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We got your Chardonnay. I bought a couple bottles of it. I tried it a little while ago at Archive. I thought it was great.
I'm so grateful that you came to the release party. There were a lot of people that showed up that night.
It was packed. Good for you.
It's a weird thing about being a grown-up when you kind of start a passion project. And, you know, when I remember in my early 20s when I was playing in bands, you spend a lot of time begging your friends to come and see you. And you hope that someone shows up.
Yeah.
But like when you're in your 30s and you start doing something like this, It's sort of nice to know that you don't have to count on people to show up. I'm not going to lie. A lot more people showed up that night than I thought they would.
Yeah.
And we went through a lot of wine. It was great to see people come and try the Chardonnay.
Yeah. Someone who did theater, who was a drama major back in the day, same kind of thing. Come out, see the show, or, you know, come out and see the improv. So first off, what are we drinking?
So this is Damn Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. The wine company is called 80X. 80X, and we're kind of owning it right up front because the four people who are involved in the company, we are all born in the 80s, so we're kind of that first generation of millennials, and there's constantly people ragging on millennials.
You're not a millennial,
their
drinking
habits.
The 80s. You're too old.
I'm 83. I'm 83, so I'm on that fine cusp. I'm one of what they call the Zennials, old enough to remember that the internet didn't exist.
Aren't you Gen Y? Because I'm born in 1975.
Okay.
So I'm Gen X.
Yeah, you're the tail end of Gen X.
Okay, so I'm the tail end of Gen X. You're millennial?
Well, it depends on who you ask.
Okay.
And the thing is, I'm the oldest person in the crew, and we get younger from there. So yeah. we're really kind of owning that in terms of just the fact that we want to make great wine. For me, as a wine writer, as someone who maintains like underwinereview.ca, I thought it'd be a great learning experience to kind of get really deep into the appellations, just understand a little bit more about how the business works. Because as consumers, we open up a bottle of wine, and that's the one product we have to buy.
Yeah.
Like the first year that I did this, I made some Nouveau in 2015 at Rosewood. When you sit at your computer desk and you're talking to your winemaking partner, and he's just like, okay, we got to order bottles. It's just like, crap.
Oh my God. This
where do I order bottles? You don't go to the winemaking store that, you know, you make and bottle it and order bottles there. Like there are supply stores that carry industrial scale products for wineries.
How'd you get into this? Tell me a little bit about the genesis behind the damn Chardonnay.
Okay. The genesis behind the company was I got really, really drunk with a winemaker in Niagara.
There you go.
And you know, we've all had those conversations where it's just like, wouldn't it be a great idea if we did this?
Yeah.
And you know, we were just like, I was just like, I was talking about how much I love Nouveau, and that's where the Nouveau came from. How much I love Nouveau. I'd gone to Beaujolais, and I got to taste really, really great Nouveau in 2014. And then when we'd sobered up, he called me up, and he was just like, so are we doing this or what? Mm. And it was just like, okay, well, the gauntlet's down, so we may as well do it. And, you know, we had to find a financial backer and another friend of mine who helps me just sort of learn about the selling. It's a friend of mine who has a wine education from Bordeaux. Guillaume, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry if I got the city wrong and where you got your schooling, but I know you know about wine.
Well, it's okay. By the way, if you're going to make a mistake, better your Bordeaux than where'd you learn it? In Bismarck, North Dakota.
Yeah, something
you
know, like
if
that.
If you're going to choose, better to be Bordeaux.
Yeah, and then things sort of progressed. Like, we made the Nouveau, and we took a very expensive bath because the Nouveau re-fermented in the bottle, and rather than sell faulty wine...
Oh, no.
We sold about half of it, and people drank it quickly, but when January rolled around, it started undergoing malolactic fermentation in the bottle, and I didn't want to be the guy walking into restaurants or selling to acquaintances and other people in the industry selling fizzy wine.
Yeah.
So we took a year off, kind of regrouped, and started making rosé, and it's just we made a decision taking a look at how the business works to... without compromise, work with grapes that grow really well in Ontario. And after taking a really expensive bath in red wine being poured down my friend's kitchen sink.
That must have been tough. That must have been a tough night.
I had to open 300 bottles by hand and dump them down the sink. You tell the government that the wine is spoiled and you need to destroy it because everything is taxed and it's alcohol and you have to report things. Every single bottle that was made that went fizzy went down the sink.
Yeah.
That
must have been a tough night. Let's go over where the grapes from.
For
the Chardonnay.
The Chardonnay, the grapes are from Rockaway. Mm-hmm. Rockaway is the last winery on the 20 mile bench.
Mm-hmm. 20 mile. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions.
Yeah. And I'm doing my best with the Appalachian. It's in and around like it's the last winery before you get to Henry of Pelham. It's right around the corner from 16 mile 13th Street.
Okay.
Creekside. It's in and around there.
Right. And so you're basically for people listening, you're around this, you're close to the St. Catharines area.
Yes, very
you're
close still, to St. Catharines.
You're about 10 kilometers or so away from like Niagara.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So that's you're getting the grapes from around Henry of Pelham, beautiful area.
Yeah, and we were getting our grapes from essentially whoever will help us out. Like we bought Wismer fruit for the Nouveau. We bought grapes from a winery called Ridge Point to make rosé last year. So we really are grape nomads, but it's really exciting to have an opportunity to work with different appellations and different regions, just like you said, because one of the exciting things about making craft wine and making high quality craft wine is being able to work with the place that the fruit comes from and also dealing with the vintage conditions. Rockaway is where our wines are made.
Mm-hmm.
So we're under contract with Rockaway. They're a fantastic partner. They've been great to work with. And it was really, it just felt like a right fit when you go in there. I think there's probably a lot of people here who may or may not know Rockaway, but a lot of people who are more average consumers will know Rockaway because they have a golf course. They make a lot of more affordable wines that tend to work their way through the LCBO. Mm-hmm. Their Patio 9 is a Vidal-based sparkling wine that's like 12, 13 bucks a bottle. It's great, but if you get a chance to go to the winery, you need to try some of the small batch stuff. The winemaker at Rockaway, David Stasiak, is, and I'm not just saying this because they let me make wine in their facility, but he is a fantastic winemaker, does really great stuff with Syrah. His red blends, his Meritage blends are outstanding. Does great stuff with Chardonnay and some of the whites too. But yeah, in 2017, we were fortunate enough to get all the Chardonnay from Rockaway and turn it into our damn Chardonnay.
Well, let's. I want to talk about first just about your relation with the growers and what the give and take is.
Okay.
But when you are, when you were, you know, as you said, a nomad, how do you determine where it is like, okay, we want our grapes from these people? How much of it is, you know, what you know about the grape growers? How much is from what you try yourself? I'm just curious, your own mental, you know, box, you know, you're checking off boxes about, okay, these grapes are acceptable for the vision we want.
Well, we're working with Pinot Noir for our rosé, and I made a decision to use Pinot Noir for rosé. Not that Gamay or Cab Franc doesn't make great rosé from Ontario, but I just, Pinot Noir rosé is really special, mm-hmm. and it's just softer. It generally doesn't have the pyrazine that you'll get from even Gamay or Cabernet Franc, even in the hands of a really great winemaker. It's just a, it's a crush. It makes crushable rosé.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to work with the bench. I think everyone's got their eyes on Prince Edward County, and they make amazing Pinot Noir in Prince Edward County. But I think we overlook how great the Pinot Noir is that comes from the bench, from the Beamsville bench,
yep.
And all along the escarpment there. So when we bought our first batch of Pinot Noir, we got it from Mauro Scarcellone, who is the owner of Ridgepoint, and he had a few rows of Clone 777 Pinot Noir planted at Ridgepoint. Clone 777 is floral and pretty and light, and it was just like, okay, we need to get our hands on this yeah. fruit. And Mauro is a really, really nice guy, and the winery itself is really another place that's sort of underrated. So, I mean, there's sort of a trend building up that we're getting a chance to work with wineries that are either on their way up or are just not getting as much love as they deserve.
You're finding like undervalued areas that are getting, it's not that they don't make good quality, but they might be getting overlooked.
100%. Like Mauro has Alsatian.
You can get it cheaper, like probably a little bit less expensive than if you're in Prince Edward County.
Not true at all. The price of grapes set by the government.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So the grape growers of Ontario set the price of grapes.
Wait, hold on. Really?
Yeah.
And you're going to have to fill me in on this because
yeah.
I just assumed, you know, for instance, the price of grapes in, say, Meursault versus Village level Chablis,
yep.
there's going to be a huge difference in the price of the grapes. So the grapes that you buy are the same as if you bought it near like Clos and Chase?
Yep. The price is set by the government and it's set by sugar levels. So,
I didn't know that.
And this is a throwback to, this is going like when the Wayback Machine, like history wise, because we've had a grape industry in Ontario for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And before we had vinifera, Vitis vinifera planted, which are wine growing grapes, there were, Labrusca. I can't remember the name of the species.
Yeah, Labrusca.
But I mean, like yep. Concord grapes. Yeah, it didn't make great wine, but yeah. the price is dictated by the level of sugar in the grapes. Now, Yeah, well. And I mean, that's not saying there aren't a couple of ways around it. Like, you know, there's other fees that are sometimes work their way onto invoices when you're dealing with growers. But the way it's supposed to work is the price is set by the grape growers of Ontario. And if Matt, if you want to see what it costs to buy a ton of 22 bricks Pinot Noir,
yeah.
you can go to the grape grower website and it's
really?
Right there.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to nerd out some point and check that out.
Well, and I mean, it's a bit of a challenge because then
yeah.
you have an incentive. Like it's tough to, I imagine it's tough as just a grape grower to want to be super premium when you have to drop fruit to produce higher quality fruit, when your price is dictated by sugar level. When if you take a look at Prince Edward County, once again, you can get fantastic Pinot Noir that's only 12% alcohol,
mm-hmm.
which is a little lower than even what you'll find in the bench, and certainly lower than you'll get in Burgundy or Oregon, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely Oregon. Yeah, I gotta say, that is, I had no idea about that. Your relationship with your grape growers, how much input do you have about what you want, your vision about when the grapes are supposed to be picked, all that kind of stuff? Like, do you have any, or is it mostly they tell you?
The growers and the winemaker has zero say on when the grapes get picked. Mm-hmm. Mother Nature decides when the grapes get picked.
But there are people that say, no, no, we're going to wait for longer, try to get a little plumper. There's others that say, no, we're going to pick it, you know, a little bit more lean. Like there is decision-making that goes into it.
We had some fun making wine in 2017, because 2017 was a really challenging summer for Ontario. It was wet. It was rainy.
Yeah.
It was cool. And I remember like the second week of September, we took, like, we keep an eye on the vineyards. We work with our grower. We took some samples from the vineyard, and our sugar level was, I think the samples came in at like 16 bricks. So if we had made wine with the fruit that we'd harvested the second week of September, we would have had a rosé with like 9% alcohol, 8% alcohol.
Yeah.
And we made a decision when we made wine that we weren't going to muck around with it. Like, can we swear on this?
Oh, yeah, of course.
One of the things that Josh at Archive has told me when I've tasted wines with him before is don't fuck with the wine.
Yeah.
And, like, Josh isn't really a zealot when it comes to natural wines and things like that. Josh's wine list is varied, and, like, I'm grateful that he's carried the wines that we've made. But Josh really gives a crap about that the wines taste good. But when you really, really start to taste wines, and you taste a lot of wines, like wine, as many wines as someone like you or I do in a year, you can tell when a wine has been manipulated with, when something's been removed. Because when you remove a bad thing from a wine, you're also taking little bits of the good stuff with it as well. So we didn't want to add sugar to the wines or anything. 2017, we got the miraculous few weeks where we got like the last bits of summer were in the last 3 weeks of September, and the fruit magically ripened to where we needed to get 11% alcohol. But because of all the moisture, we got the phone call from our winery. Like, we got the phone call from Morrow at Ridgepoint, and, you know, we got the phone call from Vadim, like our winemaker. And it was just like, okay, we got to harvest today or we're going to lose the fruit, because it'll just start to break down. It'll start to rot just from the amount of moisture we had. So we didn't have any say in what we were doing in 2017. It was the day go time happened, was that was the first day we could harvest that the fruit was ripe, and we did it.
How different do you view rain in September now versus before you started making wine?
Very, very different. But that being said, though, because the difference in 2017, 2018, like, we haven't, in Ontario, we haven't seen the sun since the end of September.
That's true.
And I love Cabernet Franc from Ontario, but I am so grateful that I did not decide to hang my hat on my little winemaking project on Cabernet Franc, because we got a glorious September, and we harvested our Pinot Noir on September 25th. And this year was fantastic, and the fruit was great. The juice is great. We're really looking forward to getting our rosé in bottle. But then October rolled around, and these wineries are working with Bordeaux varieties.
Oh.
Like, the glorious hot summer that we got was crippled by an endless rain from October all the way through to November, right?
Well, that's a good point for people looking for 2018 Bordeaux blends. There'll probably be less of it. It might be more expensive, and it probably won't be, if it's a true, it won't be as good as some of the.
Now, that being said, sparkling, Chardonnay, Riesling, Pinot Noir, those are all going to be killer kick-ass bottles from Ontario in 2018, because they ripen early. They're ready to go earlier.
I want to bounce around, because you're mentioning about reviews. And there's something in, when this podcast is posted, it's gonna be a couple weeks since I read this review. I think it's Jimmy Good. I'm trying to remember the wine writer. You'll know him.
Like,
And he had this, and this story is going to be horrible because I'm going to mispronounce everything, but I promise we're going to get to the finish line. You know the California Pinot Noir, Miomi, begins with an M. It's like five letters.
Yep.
You know the one I'm talking about. It's like 24, 25 bucks.
Yep.
And it's become a big hit. Like, it's everywhere at the LCBO.
It's got the bear on the label, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
His review, he had so many qualifiers before he actually gave his review. He almost was apologizing ahead of time. And he said, if I trash this wine, then people in the end, then I'll be called a wine snob. If I love this wine, people within the wine industry are going to say I am selling out. And I found it so, because the wine is, you talked about manipulating wine.
Yes.
This is a manipulated wine.
Absolutely.
This is a lot of it. Not as much as Apothic Red, but there's a lot of sugar and things added to
it. Hey, if you want to shit on mass-produced Californian wines, I'm all about that.
And listen, there's good mass-produced California wines as well.
But the popular ones aren't good.
No, they're not.
I will straight up say that.
Yeah.
People are wrong if you're drinking them. If you're drinking Apothic, you're wrong. You're drinking Seven Deadly Zins, you're wrong. You're drinking Miomi, you're wrong.
And see, that was what I was going to get to. Now I know the answer. Do you find it difficult? Because it's weird in this industry where there are so many people that are reading, that are getting into wine, and they have a level of insecurity. Yep. So you don't want to go and flat out say they're wrong, because what you hope for is from Seven Deadly Sins, they eventually get to Turley, you know, or they get to Ridge.
Which I'm wearing a t-shirt of today.
You're in a Ridge t-shirt. We'll get into what you're wearing.
Okay.
But yeah, do you find you have a tough time with that, with your reviews, where you don't want to be too harsh and scare away people, but at the same point, you want to be honest?
I tend to review wines and put wines on my website from a standpoint of, if I don't have anything nice to say, I won't say anything at all.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, same thing here.
And I mean, it's not that I'm afraid to necessarily give a shitty review. It's just the fact that every 2 weeks, the LCBO releases 120 new wines and spirits. And I can only hold a reader's attention for so much time. Like, I only review a handful of wines every week.
Yeah.
You and I both come from a radio background.
Yep.
And as soon as you start going off on something really, really negative, and although for some reason, like, movies are sort of an exception to that. People like to hear shitty reviews of movies. But, like, it's more likely to lose someone's attention. And why would I waste, like, space on my website to review the one or two, or even out of 120, 10 bad wines, when I could guide you to the 10 good wines and make my website a positive place.
Yeah.
And that's not saying that when I taste wines with winemakers in Niagara, or I meet a winemaker face to face, I'm not giving them feedback on what I think of the wines. It took me a really long time to understand Pinot Noir from California. And the thing that's frustrating when you visit Californian winemakers is they'll pour their Pinot Noir for you and be like, oh, this is really Burgundian.
They all say that.
But it's just like, no, stop trying to compare yourself to France. You guys have your own thing going on with Pinot.
Yes.
Your market loves it.
Yeah.
People in California love it. There's people in Toronto that love Californian Pinot. Own it.
But they
say that it's Californian Pinot.
There's always an insecurity with the California winemaker. Every time I've been in California, or every time at the California wine show at Royal York Hotel, like, the amount of times they go, well, you know, ours is very Burgundian. Like, no, it's not. Embrace what you are.
100%. I mean, it's
don't make 15.5% Pinot Noir.
But here's the thing. Make 15.5% Pinot, but own it. You have a market for it.
Yeah.
And you and I can taste 15.5 Pinot, and we both said that we can taste when a wine's been manipulated.
Yeah.
We can recognize that this is a well-made wine. There is nothing manipulated about it. Does it taste like what the winemaker wants it to taste like? Yes. Someone is going to love this wine. We can assign it a fair score, but we're not going to drink it in our homes because it's not what we like to drink personally.
Yes. And that's a fair way to put it. Oh, I just thought about this. Okay. Because the thing with this podcast is, there's a lot of people that are getting into wine, new to wine.
Yeah.
Andre, give them your advice. These are people, and, you know, I think a lot of us were there at one point. They love their big California cabs.
Cool.
And especially for 1995, because, you know, you can do Napa Cab for 1995 is pretty much a myth.
These days, yes, and unfortunately.
Yeah. So my question is, where would you tell people to go? Either specific producers or areas of the world where it's like, okay, you like Napa Cab, but you want to try something else. But what's that?
Chile. Mm-hmm. Chile is operating on a pretty high level when you're talking about entry level Cab Sauv. If we're talking about Cab Sauv specifically, it's kind of hard to go wrong with that. But the general advice that I give to people when they're getting into wine and learning about wine is, number one, once you've hit a comfort zone with what you like, bump up what you're spending by $5.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't make a lot of money, but $20 to $25.
Andre, you're a radio producer. You went into that job for the money.
Oh, totally. No, but the thing is, you know, I believe you are what you eat, and I want to be the good stuff.
Yeah.
So the first thing you need to do is be ready to spend just a little bit more. And I'm not talking about dropping $100, although I'm now at the point where my love of wine has led me to bottles. I never thought I'd find a bottle of wine that I thought was worth $100 until I tasted it.
Yeah.
And
that sucks.
But it's glorious when you discover it, right? It's sort of like it's well, you drive a BMW, right?
No, BMW. I always find BMW drivers are the biggest D-bags. I was an Audi, and I'm Volkswagen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but the moment you got behind the wheel of that Audi, like that feels a hell of a lot different than getting behind the wheel of a Honda Civic.
Yes.
And you don't appreciate it until you get a chance to experience it. But you've got to know what you want and what you really love. Like, I really love cars. Like, that effect might be lost on my wife, but the same thing. My wife, and I'm not saying that my wife doesn't know anything about cars. She's just not interested in cars the way I am.
You're not going to know everything about everything.
And that's it. Yeah. But the thing is, she can still appreciate, you know, the leather seats and the heated seats and some of the comfort things from an Audi that you maybe wouldn't find in an entry-level Honda Civic.
Yeah.
So, like, when you're talking about wine, be ready to spend just a few more bucks if you've hit your comfort zone and go there. I tried to tell people not to drink the same thing twice. You're going to find something you love, but if you fall into that rut, you might become a wine existentialist. And there's nothing beyond what you drink.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with keeping that bottle on hand and trying something different. And, you know, you might find some misses, but you're going to find some wines that you really love. And the fact that wineries put the number, the year that the wine was made on the bottle, your wine should be tasting different every year that it comes from. If it tastes the same every year, it's probably a manipulated wine.
Yeah. And you don't want that. Like, you want, you know, some... like ports, like maybe a tawny port to kind of taste the same,
yeah.
Or, you know, a Fino Sherry or Scotch. Or,
those are made different ways, though.
Yeah, exactly. They're made, or Budweiser. You want those different. You want those, excuse me, the same. But no, wine, you want it to be. It's one thing I always appreciate about Pearl Morset.
Yeah.
You know, I have no idea what's in. And just one off the top of my head, there's tons and tons and tons. All the good stuff. Yeah, every year tastes a little different.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are we drinking? Tell me, give me some tasty notes.
And then
I want to find out just also how you got into wine. Did you have an aha moment or was it just you woke up one day? But first, give me some tasty notes. You don't have to go full.
Ooh, okay.
You don't have to grid it totally, but just some of your thoughts.
No, so the 2017 Chardonnay, I got to give the backstory of it because it's kind of fun. Because Chardonnay is divisive. But
we can get into that because it shouldn't be. There's no reason to be divisive with Chardonnay.
I agree with you on that.
And I
love Chardonnay from everywhere. Warm climate, cool climate, oak, un-oaked, like just lay it on me.
It's, by the way, it's my, like if we all have our guilty pleasures, mine's California Chard. The Wente, which is still just under $20.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. Is it a little bit overly oaked? Maybe, but for me, Chard, and I mean, I appreciate all, I mean, you know, if I have to choose, I'm going to take Corton.
Okay, so
like
you do your D-bag posts on Twitter where you unapologetically pose a picture of you sitting at
sunset
the cottage.
With a bottle, with a glass of wine.
My D-bag choice wine is the Paul Hobbs Russian River Chardonnay, which goes for $65 a bottle. Near perfect balance. Alcohol is, you know, higher than you get in Ontario, that's for sure. But I find the wine's usually pretty balanced and... $65, yeah, that's a lot of money to ask for like a regular sipping wine, but oh man.
It's good.
I love that wine every year.
Oh yeah,
so much.
Paul Hobbs is great. Another one I really like, but you don't get as much here. Actually, no, you can find it. David Ramey.
Okay.
Hyde Vineyard, really good stuff as well. And Ramey's been, you know, he was a scientist before he was, and not in a bad way, like just he was a scientist farmer type before. But I love that's my 55 to 65 Chardonnay.
And the thing is, like 55 to 65, like that's buying a nice, you know, you're buying a nice piece of meat for a dinner party. Not that you, well, if you want to eat red meat with your Chardonnay, go nuts. But when I'm drinking Paul Hobbs Chardonnay, I'm not pairing it with anything.
Yeah.
I'm pairing it with people I love very much who I make sure enjoy it as much as they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Because I'm not usually that guy. I think everyone should enjoy a bottle of wine exactly as much as they're supposed to. And when I have people who aren't in the wine industry and I open up an expensive bottle in my house, they're like, oh, it's going to be lost. And he's just like, nope. Drink it. You're going to enjoy it exactly as much as you're supposed to.
Yeah. Sorry, we got off topic.
Yeah.
I get very passionate about Chardonnay.
Oh, me too. But that's sort of why we made this. Is like I said, I want to work with grapes that grow well in Ontario and grow well every year. Like, I'm not in this to make money, but at the same time, I don't want to take another, you know, like $4,000 bath in red wine.
Yeah.
So I decided we should try to make Chardonnay. And I was asking my financial backer, one of the business partners, I said, Trish, we got to make Chardonnay. Like, it grows well. Like, I can sell it. I can get it in restaurants. She hates Chardonnay. And she's tried. She really has tried. And we were having the conversation with me and the other three partners. And finally, she just says, okay, fine. You can have your damn Chardonnay. And that's why
that's
we call it
title.
Damn Chardonnay. So
it's got a beaver on it eating a tree, which could imply oak. I mean, if you really want,
we didn't even think of the connection with oak, but it is oaked. Second and third use barrels from Rockway.
Mm-hmm.
We had 7 barrels total. 2 of the barrels were wild ferment. I think a wine has to taste good. I'm not an apostle of natural winemaking, but at the same time, I don't want to dick with the wine.
Yeah,
we had the 2 barrels go wild, and we just Let them go and saw what happened. I would have done all seven wild if I could, because I love wild ferment Chardonnays from Niagara, but the other ones just didn't go. And you know, we used several different yeast strains. We'd have to talk to Vadim about what the yeast strains we used were, if you want to be that nerdy about it. And then we put the wine together, and I mean, it's got pretty high acid, which is indicative of the cool, rainy, wet, kind of crappy summer. But the vineyards were managed by David Stasiak at Rockway. He does a great job managing the vineyards. There's a little bit of that like funkiness that you get to it. I've always had a hard time coming up with a proper descriptor for it. But when you get a wild ferment wine from Ontario, it just has this like little bit of like dirty funk to it. But it works. So it's sort of like the baking spice note. But I don't know. Matt, how would you describe it?
Well, I get it. It's funny. When I was drinking, when I had a little bit of in the linger, and I get the wild funk. Absolutely. It's not blaring at a 10 decibel, but there is a little bit. And I like dirty funk. I get a little bit, in the end, a little bit of caramel.
Yep.
And I don't even mean like some cloying sweetness. But it's like, imagine, like, you know, you won't say apple, but you might say apple skin.
Yeah.
This douchey.
Bruised apple? Yeah.
No, caramel skin.
Caramel skin?
Oh, that is pretty douchey. But I get a little bit of that. I get a little bit of slightly candied. Like, this is just stuff on the end. Slightly candied orange, but again, only slightly. But
I mean, I would have liked something, because we just talked about California Chardonnay. I like something that lingers on the back a little bit more, but the acids are still high on this. But it's great because we're working to get this in restaurants. Gare de l'Est is pouring it in Toronto, Bolit is pouring it in St. Catharines, and it's the thing for me that's tough about Chardonnay, especially really big Chardonnay. And this was not a big Chardonnay, and I didn't want it to be a big Chardonnay. But a big Chardonnay is tough for me to do with food. And I really like wine and food to go together.
Yeah.
When I open a big Chardonnay, that's usually my dessert.
Yeah,
this is a Chardonnay that goes really well with food, I think.
Oh yeah. It's not overly oaky at all. You're right. The acid is there. It's pretty linear throughout. You know, you still get a bunch of the stone fruit, a lot of the orange, and you know, a little bit of lemon lime coming through. It's a good, well balanced.
Thank you.
Plenty of depth on it. Like, it is definitely more than easy drinking. You have a sip and you go, oh, okay, I'm getting that, and that.
We're also drinking this pretty close to room temperature too, and I'm actually really surprised at how well it's showing. Quite warm. I hate Chardonnay when it's too cold. I usually like it just like 5 degrees cooler than this, but I don't know. I love taking a bottle of Chardonnay and letting it warm up like right to like 15 Celsius.
Ooh.
If you want to go like douchey on that, like get out the thermometer and just like, okay, we're at the sweet spot, 15 Celsius.
That would be pretty douchey. It's funny. It's always something like, I think that's why I always say on all my tweets, here's my next douchebag tweet. Like, I want people to know this is on purpose. I hope you're in on the joke, which is always the big thing.
I don't think there's anything. I think there's something. One of the things I love about your tweets is because you drink wines that are a little out of reach for what I would normally drink. But you're very disarming and self-aware of what you do. And I love talking to you about wines because I learn a lot from you when I talk to you about wines and just get your opinion about it.
And right back.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. And it's funny. Do you ever... here's the thing I always yell and scream about.
Okay.
If I don't like a certain beer.
Okay.
You know, but then I say I like Coors Light. People that like beer go, oh my God, that beer stinks. How can you not like this beer? I'm not, you know, I don't call them a beer snob. But when I say I'm not really a fan of Barossa Shiraz, it's like, oh, there's just cuz being a wine snob. I'm like, no, I pour it in my mouth and then my mouth says what I like or don't like. But wine snob, people drop that term in a moment's notice. No one ever does beer snob. No, it is another thing. It always bothers me.
It does. It bothers me too. And I've been trying to find a way to sort of crack the code. I was having a conversation with Bill Rettelmeyer, who's the owner of Southbrook.
Ooh, actually, by the time you hear this, the Rettelmeyer, that interview will be
up. You talked to Bill?
Oh, yeah.
Is it like a 3-hour podcast?
Unfortunately, I keep them to under an hour, but I will go back and do a part two.
I love Bill's storytelling. But we were talking about craft beer drinkers, the fact that craft beer is really... Like it's disarming. It's easy to go to the LCBO and pick up like a bunch of tall boys that are variety and not worry about being called a snob. And he's just like, how do we get the craft beer drinker to switch to craft wine? And it's just like, you're not going to do that. It's different band, different audience.
Yeah.
And I think the thing about craft beer is being pulled up from the lowly origins of the large mass-produced beers that yep. our parents knew and loved, mm-hmm. where wine, we're trying to pull it down a little bit. I mean, it's coming from a really high pedestal, and I know that I appreciate and respect the knowledge and the effort it takes to become a sommelier and to work in a restaurant and to put on the tie and work the floor.
Yeah.
But there's a huge disconnect between the people who are selling the wine at the restaurants and the people who are making the wine, and there needs to be a way to meet that more in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Well, the best psalms are always the ones that are, they're not intimidating, and they're there to help you. You at the restaurant or you at the LCBO. You know, that those are the best psalms. The ones that I've talked to, like Heather McDougall from Montecito.
Yeah.
She's great. And I mean, she has the total non-douchebag, you know, policy.
But I mean, even the people who aren't, like the people who aren't, and there's a lot of really great psalms in the city, though, it's still terrifying as a consumer to walk into a restaurant and read a wine list.
I know.
And I don't have the answer. I do not have the answer to make a wine list more disarming. I do not have an answer to try to make things easier. Like having flights of wine like they do at Archive, I think is sort of a great start. But
yep.
even then, it can still be a little overwhelming to want to go and drop the money.
If you're new to wine, I would like Archive. Yeah, it could be. You'll either take to it and you'll love it, or you could run away. And the problem is,
Archive is a foolproof wine list. If you want to go in there and spend $30 on a cheap date and have a couple glasses of wine before going somewhere else, go there and point at the blackboard. There's a couple glasses of cheap wine. They're going to be fantastic because Josh does not pour shitty wine at his place. If you want to go there as a lawyer and debag it up and impress a client and mm-hmm. drop a couple $100, you can do that there.
Yeah. I hate those environmental lawyers. They're all a bunch of D-bags. And the ones that... Anyway. I think part of it is, I don't think you can ever make the truly perfect intimidation-free wine list. It's not going to happen because there's so much to know.
Yep.
And especially France or Italy,
yep.
you've got to do a lot more decoding.
Oh, Italy scares the crap out of me, but I'm taking little bite-sized pieces. Like mm-hmm. I went to Franciacorta a couple of years ago, nice. And that was a perfect place to dip my toe in the pond. And Franciacorta is so much like Ontario. Like, it's really nuts.
Is it real? I haven't been there. Obviously, I'm a fan.
Chardonnay, Pinot, Cab Franc, Cab Sauvignon. Oh, okay. That's what they got planted there.
If people don't know, French Quarter, northern part of Italy,
yep.
And their sparklings actually have a higher aging requirement than even champagne, but you can get a French Quarter for less, the average price for French Quarter, less than your average champagne.
Yeah, so, about $40 to $50.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about it is flavor profile tends to be a little bit more ripe than mm-hmm. champagne, so a little bit less citrus, a little bit more orchard fruit. But they hold on to their acidity, which when you're talking about sparkling that tastes like orchard.
That's what you
I hate it. To pick on California, but California, you get orchard fruit flavored sparkling where the acids are usually a little bit lower than they should be.
Yeah.
Not saying they don't make great sparkling in California, but.
You always got to throw that at the end.
Well, I love Californian wines, and we've spent so much of this podcast shitting on California.
Santa Barbara. Try great Chardonnays and Pinots. Santa Barbara does some really good stuff.
I've come back to Mondavi. Mm-hmm. Like the Mondavi Napa Cab Sauv is, I think, $40 at the LCBO.
Yeah.
If you want to taste what real Napa Valley Cab Sauv tastes like, $40 is not too much to ask considering what you could be spending.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing. Buy that and just, you know, open it only on the weekends, a little bit more special. If $40 is a high price,
yep.
then, yeah, it you're right. That is that's a great example of textbook California Cabernet that's also mass-produced.
Mass-produced, but not dicked with.
Yeah.
Like, not heavily manipulated.
And that's the main thing. Like, I personally, I don't care about, oh, our wine is 100% natural, and we don't filter, and we don't fine, and we use no chemical, like, all that kind of stuff. I don't care about it. As long as you put it, it's a perfect way. You don't dick with it. And it's called varietal typicity.
Okay.
Does it taste the way it's supposed to?
Yes.
I remember the worst bottle of wine I've ever had.
Okay.
I was at Second City.
Okay.
And, God, I forget. It was a Merlot.
Okay.
I think it was some sort of South American Merlot.
Okay.
There's not a lot of options. You're at Second City, but heaven forbid I go a couple hours without wine.
I feel the same way.
Yeah. I know I'm speaking to a doppelganger on that. And it just tasted like red sugar juice.
Yep.
You know, it's like, is this Syrah? Is this Pinot? Is this Cab? Is this, I don't know. It's just red sugar juice. And that to me is always the worst.
And it's also tough when you're new to wine and you're drinking a lot of the really like more affordable entry level wines. When you do have a lot of that residual sugar, like if you're drinking a sweet wine, there's a good chance that sugar is going to pummel what the fruit is supposed to taste like.
Yeah.
If you do like wines that taste sweet, though, you might want to gravitate towards somewhere warm. California, Chile, South Africa, Australia.
New world. Yep. Basic tip. If a world war was fought on that land, avoid it if you want something that's a little more sweet.
That's a really easy picture to paint. Mm-hmm. I'm going to steal that.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I've been telling people, like, when we to go back to the telling people how to get into wine, I'm almost done asking people whether they prefer red or white, because I hate it when people ask me if I prefer red or white because I can't answer the question. Mm-hmm. But warmer and cool climates, I find, are almost a more interesting way to divide whether you like certain wines, right?
What do you, is there an area, because I know you've done a lot of traveling, is an area, is there a wine that has really been turning your crank recently?
Who? Well, the DiMartino wines from Chile blew my mind. Mm-hmm. It's a winery in the Itata Valley of Chile that are working with wild vineyards. They've purchased vineyards that have been essentially overlooked and neglected for 100 years. Varieties that don't have the prestige of Chilean Cab Sauv, things like San Francisco, Saint-Saul, Muscat, and they're making wines in Tineros. I'd have to look at my notes on how to exactly to say it, but it's essentially like a Chilean amphora. These are natural wines, which
really
I don't.
That is so hipster.
I don't give a crap about the fact that it's a natural wine. They're not making natural wines for the sake of the marketing. They're trying to recapture the 100-year-old heritage of the Chilean wines, which
that's cool.
Pretty damn cool. But the wines are awesome. Mm-hmm. They're so tasty. They're gulpable. And I know I was like in the vineyards with the winemaker when he showed me the wines, but it's just like it was like life-changing to see that you have these people working really hard to recapture this part of their heritage. And I think we're going to see some really cool wines coming out from Chile in the next little while.
You ready for the radio segue?
Go for it.
Speaking of life-changing, was there a moment for you, Andre, that got you into wine? What was that moment?
My parents always
scale
drank wine.
Scale 1 to 10. How was that radio segue as a radio
That producer? Was a 10. That was a solid 10.
Thank you. So cheese.
My parents drank wine. My parents always drank wine. So I got to skip a lot of steps in my wine journey where, you know, it's the drinking your girlfriend's wild vines because you drank all the beer in the house and then progressing to sweet Riesling and working my way down from there. My parents were really into Wolf Blass, which I know is something that once you get much deeper, you're talking about more.
Not a fan of, but hey, if that's your starter wine,
but it's more manipulated out, but it's also real wine. Like it's a good starting point.
Yeah.
Then I moved to Ontario in 2007 after finishing university and got my hands on every bottle of Ontario wine I could. And it's actually you ask about like the one wine that was like the aha moment.
Yeah. Do you have an aha moment?
Yeah. No.
Right now you can't
too
see
many. Oh, there it is. The Hillebrand 2004 Showcase Cabernet Sauvignon.
Wow.
In 2007, this wine was $35 a bottle.
Yeah.
And I drank about a half case of it at age 23 when I realized what good wine tastes like. It was...
So you got in young.
Yeah.
23 is young. I got in late. Like, it wasn't until I was around 25 or so. You know,
okay, it's only 2 year difference, but I mean, that's still early too, right? Mm-hmm.
But 25 was when I really started my journey.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it really started to take off more when I got closer to 30 and 32.
Okay.
But Hillam, you're the first with the Hillam. Now, what was it about that wine that you loved? Do you remember? I mean, it's a tough question now, 2019.
No, I can actually remember exactly what that wine tasted Perfect. Like. It was rich. It was cocoa. It had great acid to it. It had nice balance. I actually had a chance to taste that wine a couple of years ago again because I had it at the restaurant at Hillebrand. It did not hold up to aging. Certainly hasn't lasted the 10 years. But in its youth, like it was just rich and concentrated, where I was drinking a lot of the regular Trius, like the $15 wines, which are also great wines if you're new to wine and you're getting into Ontario wine. But when I jumped up to that Showcase, it was just concentration and depth that I had never tasted before in a wine, and my life got a lot more expensive that day.
Yeah, it's so true. I don't want, like, if some higher power gave me a receipt and said, Matt, here's how much you spent on wine total from LCBO, consignment, and from restaurants. I do not want to see that bill, because that bill's an Audi. That bill is probably one of them super fancy Audis.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that. Yeah. I think my bill would probably be closer to a Honda Civic, though. But
I think yours would certainly be more. Tell people about first off, Tell me about the t-shirt. You are like there's nothing says wine guy like someone wearing not only a wine shirt.
Yeah.
You know, but Ridge, California Cabernet Sauvignon, 1962.
Yeah.
Ridge, fantastic producer. Some of the best zins, great blends. They do good stuff.
They treat their entire portfolio with love from bottom to top. But if you want a template on how to run a winery, you need to go to Ridge Lytton Springs. And I consider it now a pilgrimage whenever I'm in California to go to Ridge Lytton Springs. You walk in, their Three Valleys Zin blend is about $20 a bottle, American. Yep. And it is extremely respectable Zinfandel, and you can go from bottom to top. My wife had to stop me in 2015 three times from buying the Montebello, 2012 Montebello.
How much?
It was $180. She stopped me. I did not buy it.
$180 American.
No, $180 Canadian.
Oh, okay.
It's $180 Canadian.
That's a steal. Why don't you get a couple?
God, it's still so much money. But so I really love the Estate Cab Sauv from Ridge at the winery because it's $50 American a bottle. So like $80 Canadian.
Yep.
And it's a steal. Like it's made with Montebello fruit, but it is not in the Montebello tier, and it's just outstanding California cab. But the cool thing is when you go to their tasting room, I've been in that tasting room with people who know a lot about wine to my left and people who knew nothing about wine to my right, and they treat everyone there with such warmth, respect, and dignity where it's just taste our wine. And to walk into a place that's as disarming as that, you need to go to this winery. Mm-hmm. Like straight up, there's something for everyone there. Even if you don't want to spend a lot of money, you'll go taste everything and you'll walk out of there with a bottle of the Three Valleys. It'll be impossible not to.
All right, let's give some tips to people when they're at tasting rooms, the do's and don'ts. here's the first, and this is, I think, I'm going to take the biggest don't. If you are someone that is getting into wine, you've taken some courses, you've read Wine Spectator, don't be know-it-all person.
Okay,
listen, I get it. You now know the difference between French and American oak. Don't be where you ask three oak-related questions because you're holding everyone up. There's my first tip.
Well, my second tip is if you want to be that guy, especially in Ontario, this is the time of year to go because the tourists aren't there. Mm-hmm. If you're in a busy tasting room, know the crowd.
Yeah.
If you want to go nerd it up with a winemaker, this is the best time of year. We're recording this the first week of February.
Yep.
Most of the winemakers are back from vacations. Things are really slow in the tasting rooms. You could go and actually taste with the winemaker who will likely be around.
Yeah.
And you want to ask all your nerdy questions about oak and yeast strains, do it in January. Do not do it in July.
Yeah. Of course, there's a difference between nerdy question and person who wants to show off that they know about wine.
That's true.
There is a defined difference between the two of them.
Yeah.
Another tip, I gave this, I think, on my first podcast,
but
there could be new people. If you want to get more wine, but you feel sheepish, but hey, who doesn't like more free wine in their glass? Use the word revisit. Like very simple. Andre, would you mind if I revisited the Chardonnay? I couldn't quite figure out the acidity. If you say revisit, that's much better than more booze in glass, please. So revisit.
Well, and also keep in mind that these are places of business. Like do not plan your bachelorette party at the wineries. They are not, it's not a pub crawl.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's seriously, that's a trend that needs to die. Just absolutely needs to die.
The bachelorette party at wineries.
Like you're going to the wineries to hit up the free samples at the grocery store. You're tasting these things hopefully with the intention of buying it.
Yeah.
That's not saying that it's not fun to go and taste all these wines and enjoy it and don't feel guilty about not buying anything, but you know, expect to pay the tasting fee and walk out. Go and enjoy tasting the wines, but it is not a pub crawl. Don't treat it like a pub crawl. These people have worked really hard to make these wines and they're hoping that you're going to buy them and tell other people about the wineries and do that.
That's a great one. You well said. Another one, the moment the wine has been poured, if there is other human beings around you, slide out of the bleeping way. There is nothing worse. This same goes for trade tastings or anything. The moment the wine's been poured in your glass, don't stand there. There's people behind you. Get out of the way. I hate that. It just infuriates me to no end.
Yep. Nope, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
If you're doing the tasting in July, if you're with a group of more than four people, if you've packed the minivan or you're doing a caravan with a few people, call ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, call ahead.
The wineries will appreciate it. They'll be ready for you.
Yeah. They'll rope off a little area. They'll make sure the glasses are ready.
They'll make sure that they have a member of staff ready to give you undivided attention, because it's frustrating if you show up with a group of seven people unannounced and they can't give you the attention that you need. It's frustrating on all accounts, because the wineries really want you to be happy at their wineries and they want you to taste their wines.
Oh, I got to tell you, it's the one thing I'm
doing. It's like therapy right now, getting it off our chest.
Yeah, I know. I got to tell you, the one great thing about when I was unemployed, because I'm doing a lot of, as you hear this, a lot of 1 to 4, was like going to interview like winemakers in Niagara, Prince Edward.
Yeah.
But I would go midweek, and then I would just walk into these places at like 11:45 in the morning, and there'd be no one there, and they'd be like, "What are you doing here?" But then it was great; just could try everything at leisure.
But it's also cool if you know a lot about wine and you want to learn more about how things are made in the back end.
Oh yeah.
Last January, I took a day off before the Ice Wine Festival and went down, popped into Legends Estates to just pick up a bottle of Derek Barnett's wonderful Meldville wines. There's someone you need to talk to.
Oh, I want to talk to Mel. His good stuff and not expensive.
Yep.
I remember trying it on the old restaurant on the island, Toronto Island. And I tried...
The Laley stuff when he was working with Laley, right?
No. Well, this was his stuff. This
so Meldville. Meldville.
Yeah, Meldville.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Derek was at the winery and he showed me everything that was going on in the back end. I got to taste his Sauvignon Blanc out of a brand new...
good like stuff.
500-liter barrel. He's awesome. I love Derek.
By the way, let's pour one out for Laley.
Let's do that.
You're almost out of time.
That's okay.
We're at 50 minutes. But tell me, I want to hear about tell me about the podcast. Just when you got it started and why people should, one of the Austin Powers movies came out, it wasn't the first one. Don't worry, this will get back to you in under 40 seconds.
Nope, that's cool.
They had the best movie trailer I've ever seen. And it was this: if you see only one movie this year, see Phantom Menace. Remember when the new Star Wars movies came out? However, if you think you might see two movies this year, go see Austin Powers Goldmember, whichever one
it was.
That's
really funny.
I laughed my ass off. So people listening, you have time for more than one wine podcast.
Yep.
If they want to listen, Andre, to your wine podcast, tell people about it.
It's Two Guys Talking Wine. I work with Michael Pincus, who's another well-known wine writer in St. Catharines. Mm-hmm. We are focusing very heavily on the Ontario wine industry, but it's often just an excuse for Michael and I to yell at each other. I went to the point of lining up an interview with Olivier Krug from That Krug to prove that I was right about how champagne flutes suck. And we got up at 6 a.m. to interview Olivier Krug via Skype
just
to prove my point. But I mean, that's the sort of stuff we when there's new stuff happening with VQA, with the Ontario Appellation System. I'll be honest, our podcast is a little nerdy.
Yeah.
But if you want to know what's happening in the Ontario wine industry, we got our fingers to the pulse.
Yeah.
We're talking to winemakers. We're talking to a lot of people who are connected to the industry. We just spoke to three very interesting women in January, because Michael was nice to point out that last year when he went away for a month, I brought in three men to co-host.
Yep.
But it's important to recognize the great women in the industry. So there's a lot of really cool stuff to check out. But it's pretty Ontario focused. So if you want to know what's going on in Ontario, check out our podcast.
Love it. And I love your self-indulgence. Let's talk to someone from Krug to prove I'm right. And
we did not get any wine from them out of it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you got to go to the store. Krug is my number one D-bag wine. I had a bottle of Krug for my wedding last year. My God, if there's a way to spend $300, that is definitely one of the best ways to spend $300.
I do not disagree. It is it's good stuff. So where can people get Damn Chardonnay?
Damn Chardonnay, you can get it from Rockway.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to their tasting room, if you go to 80x80x.ca, I got my email address up there and I'll be more than happy to arrange delivery. You can always support the restaurants that are pouring us: Midfield, Wine Bar, Archive, Gare de l'Est, Bolit, and Oddbird are the big five right now.
Yep. Those are some good places.
Borel as well. Really cool little Dutch eatery that's not really known for their wine, but they're carrying our wine, so they're carrying some cool wines.
Well, Andre, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
By the way, it's funny. I should tell people, when I was doing some fill-in work at News Talk 1010, the producer of Donnie would get the other producer, because Andre Nino is the technical producer.
Yep.
So he's the important one because he knows how to work the board. Yep. And then Donnie was more, you know, the content, and the one helping to shape the content of the show. And he would shoot us the evilest look.
When we would talk about wine.
And we would talk about wine for nine seconds.
But he was worried we were going to talk about it on the air because the new Stock 1010 audience, we don't do a whole lot of wine stuff, certainly not during Jim's show.
I know, but I have a sports show and I still talk about wine on air. And Donnie would shoot the. Yeah, and Donnie's one of the best producers I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
But man, he would give us an evil glare when we started talking about wine.
I think Donnie's just frustrated that every host that we work with doesn't always listen to Donnie, and they really should.
I listened to everything you said. I was there at 6:15 in the morning.
Okay, you're the good one. You're the good one.
When Donnie's like, no, Matt, that's a dumb idea. I'm like, great, Donnie, move on. You're smarter than me. Again, Andre, really appreciate.
Yes, thanks.
Cheers. Thanks so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff podcast.
I think you need to come up with a shorter name.
No, Matt Talks Wine and Stuff. Listen, your podcast also has sort of an irreverent name. Mine does as well. Mine is just far less efficient than yours.
All right.
Thanks again for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can download, subscribe on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, Audioboom, wherever good podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.